You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
The Houndsman XP podcast is fueled by Joy Dog Food. Joy Dog Food has a rich tradition of supporting the Houndsmen of America. Founded in 1945, Joy is proud of its history and the relationship it has built with the American Houndsmen. And in 76 years, there's never been a recall. Made with 100% American-made high-quality ingredients, Joy Dog Food has one of the highest calorie-dense formulas on the market. For 76 years, this made-in-America product has kept hunting dogs in the field day after day, season after season. And when we say made-in-America, Joy has a long track record of fighting for American freedoms by being on the front lines against the animal rights movement and their extremist tactics. Joy will fuel your hounds and fight for your freedoms, fueled by Joy.
My name is Bryce Matthews, and this is the Deep and Lonely Podcast presented to you by Houndsman XP. During this podcast, we will dive deep into what makes the ultimate, top-level, and unmatched extreme competition coon hunter. We will hear stories of old, tales of today, and we will dive deep into what separates the men from the boys. The stories will be raw, the truth will be told, and the camaraderie will be second to none. Pull up your chaps. It's about to get deep.
All right, guys. Welcome to the Deep and Lonely Podcast presented by Houndsman XP. Today, I am in North Central Indiana. Drove up here to have a conversation with one of the legends in our sport, I think you could call him. A guy who's really paved the way for the Tree and Walker breed over the years. A guy who's still very competitive to this day. Loves to be competitive, and he loves to pleasure hunt. Today we're speaking with Dick Brothers from Peru, Indiana. How you doing, Dick?
Very good, Bryce.
Hey, so I wanted to get you on here, Dick, because you and I have been hunting a lot the last few weeks. We found ourselves living in the same area, a good place to hunt together. And over the last few weeks, I'd say that, you know, you and I have really, really become good friends, and I've really enjoyed my time with you and our company in the woods. It's nice to have somebody to go out and hunt with, somebody who loves the sport as much as I do. So first off, I just want to say, you know, thank you for that, and I appreciate you for joining me today. Why don't you tell the listeners here just a little bit about Dick Brothers. Where did you get started? How did you get into the coon hunting? And, you know, just anything else that you think would be interesting for that paved your way in the foundation for you and your love of the sport.
Well, how I got into coon hunting, years ago, I hunted with a pair of black dogs, and that was my first experience. And they were a pair of dogs. Together, they made one good dog.
So they had to work together. You weren't turning them loose separately. You turned them loose together.
Well, and I hunted with Dick Smith one whole season. I didn't have a dog at that time. And that's what we got acquainted. He was a good friend of mine years ago.
So how old were you when you started coon hunting?
In my 20s.
Early 20s. So that's about the same path as me. You know, I got started when I was 20 years old.
Right.
A lot of these guys, it's really cool to hear how they started when they were little kids. But for me, I feel like I got a little bit later start, but it makes me appreciate it more.
Right.
A little bit. So you got started in your 20s. You've been doing this a long time, Dick. You've developed your own line of tree and walkers. You hunt your own stuff. You've accomplished one of the greatest hunts to win as far as prestige goes. And we're going to get into all that. When did you first start competition hunting? How long did it take you from the time you started coon hunting until you entered your first hunt? Do you know how that was?
I entered my first hunt. I hunted a dog at Mike Colder honed, and I hunted in the Ohio State Championship my second year coon hunting. And won second place registered in the Ohio State Championship that year.
Well, that's not bad for a beginner.
No.
Was that beginner's luck, or were you packing a good
one? Well, he said, just call her how you hear her. And I did that. And if I would have been a more experienced handler, and I wouldn't have made one mistake, I would have won first place. But, you know, I didn't know anything about playing defense.
That's a big part of the competition these
days.
Yes,
sir. And that was my first experience competition hunting.
Man, that's great. Were you bit by the bug whenever you first started competition hunting? After that night, did you know that was what you wanted to do?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. You know, I feel the same way. I went with a buddy for the first time, hunted, and just had a great time. And then I got into I went with another buddy and went competition hunting with him, just followed along in the cast with him. And watching him handle that dog and watching how that cast played out, the bug bit me. You know, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be a top level competition coon hunter. And I think you've earned that.
Well, I've always been competitive at everything I've done. I played sports, football and track, and in high school and grade school, all the way through my years, and I've been very competitive anyway. So I just picked up with coon downs.
Yeah.
And I used to field trial labs, mm-hmm. and I trained bird dogs too.
Right. So you've always had a working dog at your house. You've always been involved,
yes, sir,
with dogs in one way or another.
Yes, sir.
So you started off with a pair of black and tans. When did you switch or convert to the Treen Walker breed?
Well, I didn't own a dog at that time. I just went with Dick Smith.
Okay.
And then I met a guy by the name of Tom Wise and Mike Colder. And they introduced me to Treen Walkers. And Tom and I became friends, and we partnership up on one dog. And that was my first experience, so to speak.
That dog that you had, is that by chance one of the dogs that laid the foundation for the line that you've been hunting for years? Or
no.
Did it take a while for you to
get? No, but that dog helped me see what a good tree dog was. He was a third or fourth strike dog and a first tree dog and a pressure tree dog back then. He was out of Miller's Rock. And Laverne Miller was a real, real well-known guy, you know.
So that dog, you know, it obviously had a major influence on you. How long were you in the game before you started experimenting with breeding and wanted to have something of your own?
Well, I obtained three Walker females. And well, let me back out. I obtained a Walker female from Dick Smith, and she's a real good dog. She'd never been in a hunt before. I granted her out 1 year, and she won a Hoosier State Championship, and she died really young. She's about 6 years old when she died of cancer. So I knew she was a good dog. And then I thought I wanted to get Walker females and be a breeder, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
Trial and error.
Right.
You know. And I learned a lot of things reading the books and talking to other breeders. And so I started out three Walker females. One was Charlie Creek Jill, one was Charlie Creek Patches and Charlie Creek Beauty.
Where does the Charlie Creek name come from?
Well, when I was a kid, I lived in Wabash, and Charlie Creek run through Wabash, and I trapped that creek years ago. And I walk from home and run my trap line every morning, every night, before school and after school.
So you were doing that in grade school, and
yeah,
you know, you were just doing that to have a little pocket change, or
yeah, yes, sir.
Back in the day, the furs were worth something.
Oh yeah.
And you ran a pretty extensive trap line. You know, you told me that the other night when you and I were hunting, that was something that you enjoyed doing. do you still do any trapping, or are you strictly into the hunting now?
None at all. And when I started coon hunting, I didn't trap any coons anymore.
No more?
No more.
Just let the dogs do it?
Yes, sir.
If you were to catch one by chance, did you mess with them and turn them loose?
Yeah, well, no.
and I say that, Dick, because, you know, it's funny. As we're recording this podcast last night, Dick and I, we went out and trying to fool with a little pup of mine, and we had a coon in a trap, and that thing would not come out. And Dick reached down there and grabbed it by the tail and pulled it out of the trap.
Well, I've been known to do a lot of crazy stuff in my time.
Oh, gosh, Dick. I mean, it made my night. I wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't expecting it. So
yeah.
I didn't know if that was something you did back on the trap line.
Yeah, well, I did, too. Do that, too, you know.
So you had your females.
Yeah, I made Jill a night champion, and I couldn't ever get a first-place win on Patches. She's a good dog, but she was independent. She would go opposite direction. Sometimes she would be out of hearing. And Breedy Dog, I made her Grand Night Champion. I placed her in top 20 of the World Hunt twice. And I won several big hunts. A lot of breed days, black and tan days, English days, and blue tick days. And she's a real deal.
Back then when you were hunting her, was UKC the only registry around that you were hunting, or
well,
were there other kennel registries?
Just PKC had just started.
Okay.
It was PCA back in.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't feel I had the money to go to two registries.
Right.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So you supported UKC the most.
Yeah, most.
Now, you said you got top 20 in the world twice.
Yeah.
That's an accomplishment that a lot of people won't get done
in,
once.
In the top 20. Yeah. I don't know where I place, you know, but.
But, you know, a lot of people go to the World Hunt, or every year they try to qualify for it. And to say that you made it into the top 20 is a feat in itself.
Yes, sir.
And you did that twice.
Right.
With the same dog.
Right. Beauty.
Did you ever make another run at the World Hunt with any other dog before you ultimately won the UKC World Championship?
Yeah. I was trying to win a world hunt, but, you know, I won 10th place in HHA World Hunt with Charlie Creek Mac, and I just kept going and trying to win it.
Right.
You know?
Was that the burning passion? Was that your ultimate goal that kept you motivated and kept you driven? You wanted to win that
world hunt? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then when I won that with Charlie Creek Terra, I said to myself, what do I do now? I just won the biggest hunt in the world, you know.
And that was in 1994 with the UKC.
1994.
With Charlie Creek Terra.
Yes, sir.
So after you won that hunt, you had that feeling of what do you do now? Did you take some time off, or did you just go back to what
you
had?
No, I just went back. You know, I made a taking a month or two off, but you know,
yeah.
I just want to win it another time.
And I, you know, just talking to you, Dick, and hunting with the last few weeks, I feel like that passion is still there. I feel like you still want to win it just as bad now as you did back then.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So after you won the world hunt with Tara, did you continue to push her and hunt, or did you lay her up and try and breed her?
Well, I made a mistake. I laid her up, you know, at 28 months old. When she won a world hunt. And, you know, back then, like we talked about the other night, Tennessee Lead was a world champion. He got killed by a hot wire. So back then, they didn't hunt very many world champions because it wasn't like it is today. We didn't have semen on being collected.
Right.
You know? But I wish I regret not hunting anymore. I could have won so much more with her.
Yeah, I think it's interesting looking into the sport now. You see some dogs that they win big, and that's the last hunt you see them in. And then you see other dogs, like recently this year's PKC world champion, Stogie. They won the world with him, and then the very next week he was in another local hunt.
Right.
You know, right. And they're still pushing that dog in local hunts because they want to support the clubs. It's interesting to see how people's perspective is on that and, you know, the thinking, the thought process behind that. Did you, after that world, did you immediately breed her or what did you do there?
Yeah, I started breeding her and she raised several good pups, you know. I would pleasure hunt her once in a while, but she stayed in the house basically. She was a house dog.
When you bred her, the pups that she threw, were you seeing characteristics of her, or what was your thoughts on that, and how did that play out and help you and the dogs that you have today?
Characteristics on her dad, Trotter Creek Mac, I seen a lot of them, and he was throwing independent dogs back then when you didn't hear about independent dogs. You know, they would be split tree by herself, you know, and Tara would be too. She was very independent. She'd buy a loner by herself, you know.
Right. So you won the world in 1994 and you lived here still in Wabash, right?
Right.
When did you make the move to Iowa? Because, you know, just to paint the picture here for our listeners, we're sitting in Dick's little office here, and there are four monster whitetail bucks hanging on the wall. And I believe you told me, you know, whenever you decided to move to Iowa, it was for better deer hunting.
Right.
As a coon hunter, walk me through that. How did you move from Indiana to Iowa to pursue deer hunting? Which, you know, a lot of times coon hunting and deer hunting don't go hand in hand.
Well, you know, I love coon hunting too, and I love deer hunting. I'm not going to trophy hunt anymore. I'm going to give it up. I was going out to Nebraska, eastern Nebraska, western Iowa for years, and my wife said, "You're gone so much. Why don't we move out there?" So we moved out there to Iowa. Yeah, western Iowa, along the Missouri River and the Lost Hills. Giant deer out there, you know.
Yeah, your walls tell the story.
I always wanted to kill a 200-inch buck, you know. I fell short on that. I killed one in 197 with my bow.
And that's the one hanging above you right here.
Yes, sir.
It's just a beautiful deer. It's got one crazy tine coming off his brow. Very symmetrical. He's a nice looking deer. What's this one over here with the double drop time score? Do you remember that?
173.
That is a very neat looking deer.
Well, there again, that's the first deer I ever killed in Iowa, and I wanted to kill a drop time deer in my life, you know, and I never seen a drop time deer in Indiana.
Right.
When I moved out there, I killed a double drop time deer. You know,
what are the odds?
Yeah,
yeah, guys, it's so neat sitting here at Dick. We're looking at these monster whitetails. We've got the big trophy here from 1994 UKC World Champion on it. Several other big trophies that just really tell the story of Dick and his accomplishments and the competition coon hunting, along with a couple albino coons here. Are those Indiana coons that your dogs treat?
Yes, sir. I've treed seven albino coons in Indiana.
Have you treated any of the other color phases, black or cinnamon?
Yeah, I've treated a lot of black ones and cinnamon phase. Yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, getting back here to your line of dogs, have you ever hunted anybody else's dogs since you established the Charlie Creek line of dogs, or is that something you've hunted since that time?
Well, no. Ever since I established Charlie Creek dogs, I haven't per se hunted one dog for any one guy consistently. I would handle a dog every once in a while for a guy in a hunt if he needed me to.
But you weren't a paid handler for anybody else running their dogs. You were always trying to push your own line.
Well, you know, I just try to help people out. I don't want to be paid for it.
Right.
You know?
No, I understand.
That's my way of thinking, you know? Maybe I'm too nice at times, you know, but that's the way I am.
So the sport of coon hunting, you told us earlier that, you know, you started out running the trap lines as a kid. And obviously coon pelts are worth some money.
Oh yeah.
Now we've got hunts with, you know, $2,500 entry fees, $6,500 entry fees. They're hunting for $100,000 to win. They're hunting for new trucks every month. And most recently they just announced the first $1 million coon hunt. What are your thoughts on that with the sport growing? Is that good for the sport? Is that something that is going to make a positive impact and a lasting impact on the sport of coon hunting?
Well, it will. It's good for the sport, but also not everybody can afford those high price hunts.
Right.
You know, but that's good for the sport, I think, really. And that makes people aware what a coon hunter can do with his dog.
Yeah. That's really something that a lot of people don't know.
They don't grab it at all.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that Houndsman XP is really trying to do is you know, preserve, promote, and protect the sport of the Houndsman, and the second word of that, promote, I think is a big deal. It needs to be promoted in a positive light, and for others who don't understand what coon hunting is and the amount of time that us coon hunters put into our dogs and the amount of care we give those dogs, you know, it's something that we need to portray in a positive light. And I agree. I think these big hunts, you know, they're not for me, but they're for somebody. Right. And there's a lot of money brought into the towns where these are being held. There's a lot of revenue coming through.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes, sir.
And it's positive recognition if we can portray it in the right light.
Right.
So I was just curious on what you thought, because I think you've been around it long enough, obviously much longer than I have. I haven't seen that transition, but to get the perspective from somebody who's seen it from the conception of the PCA, to which is now the PKC, and you know it's one of the most prestigious registries around.
Right.
I think it's just an interesting.
Yeah, you know. I think that's good for the sport, really, you know?
Right.
Really. And like I said.
So let's dive into something a little deeper here. Let's talk about the stroke that you had. When did you have your stroke?
3.5 years ago. Stroke was caused by surgery. And I had a stroke in the hospital. They give me an anti-rejection shot on the stroke, but I was paralyzed on my whole right side. And they said I wouldn't walk and speak correctly for 6 months to a year.
How long was it before you got out of the hospital?
Well, I'm a pusher, you know, and good Lord looked over me, too. Right. And I made it out of rehab, speech therapy, and physical therapy 4.5 months.
4.5 months. So you beat it. You beat that timeline by a month and a half.
Yes, sir.
What was your motivation?
I wanted to get back in the woods. I wanted to fish. I wanted to hunt again. I just wanted to. I wouldn't take no for an answer.
Right.
You know, you've got to have motivation. I know other stroke patients, they just give up. And, you know, they told me you have up to a year, get full motivation back. A year is a limit. So I push and push and push.
Yeah.
I drove Kathy nuts. I would make her take me on walk on paved streets every day, 3 times a day, you know, and I just fought.
Yeah, you say that you had that 3.5 years ago, and you're 72 now.
Yes, sir.
So it's 69.
Yeah.
Is when you had your stroke, and you were that determined because there's still more you want to do.
Right.
You're not done yet.
No.
I don't see you even slowing down.
No.
You know, you and I have been hunting a lot lately, and you get through the woods just as good as I do at 28.
Well, maybe.
You do, Dick, and that's credit to you. You know, it's easy to see your passion for the sport. When timer comes treed, you're going, and right. You're going to be there. And you hunt just as hard as anybody that I've met. You know, we haven't been hunting together very long, but I can see that. Most of the time it's me saying, all right, Dick, it's time to go. I got to work in the morning. You'll drop me off and you'll keep hunting, you know,
right.
Until the wee hours of the morning. Is that something that you've always done? Is that all you know, is to hunt hard?
Yes. Yes, sir. Really? You know, that's all I've done, ever done. Hunt hard and hard, you know, that's the only way I know how to hunt.
And I presume, you know, looking around, that's how you deer hunt as well.
Right.
When you got into something, you got into it serious, you gave it
100%.
You gave it all you had.
Yes, sir.
So do you think that having this stroke and having come back, do you think you're just as motivated now as you were back in 1994 to win that world championship?
Yes, sir. Really. Really. And you know, some guys I talked to said, you don't have anything to prove, Dick, but I don't want to give up yet.
It's not ready.
No. No. I'm not. If that helped motivate some people, maybe that's what I'm here for.
Right. Yeah. You know, it is. It's inspiring because there's some nights that I don't want to go. Why do I want to go tonight? I went the last 3 nights, but there is a goal, you know, and I'm a competition coon hunter as well. I'm very competitive. It's to win. It's to win that world. So I understand where you're coming from, on that one. Your wife, Kathy, going through that. Wow. What a woman she has to be. You know, she helped you with that stroke and you hunt hard. You get home at 4 or 5 in the morning, most nights. She's still here. It takes a special woman to love a coon hunter.
Yeah, it does.
You know, when you guys got married, were you hunting this hard back then?
Yes. Yes, sir.
And she just accepted that.
Yeah. She's been a good wife and a good partner.
Yeah.
You know.
Was she there cheering you on? Whenever you got back in the woods after your stroke, was she just as excited to see you in there?
Yes. She knew what I wanted to do, you know, and she was all for it. She wasn't at first, you know,
right.
And because I drove a truck before I was supposed to.
Right. Oh,
she
gave
me hell.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. You know, I think the same thing about my girlfriend. She's very supportive in what I do. And to see, you know, when I walked in tonight, Kathy, very, very cordial, you know, introduced herself.
Right.
It just seems like a great lady. And
Yeah.
You know, to stand there with you through it all and help you get back to something that you wanted to do, it really says a lot, you know, about her.
Right. She's a good person, really. Right. And Bobby Overby, and he came out and when I had a stroke and helped me go coon hunting and mowed my grass and trimmed my trees and took me to see the doctor on my rehab and for a week. And he took me hunted first night. I couldn't hardly walk, but I made it up a hill and got to the tree and everything, you know, with me helping him.
Yeah.
And we've been good friends ever since. And he took Timer and Big Earl back there hunting dogs for 6 months before I could get down and get them back.
And that's when you were still in Iowa?
Yes, sir.
And he lives on the East Coast?
He drove 22 hours one way.
That says a lot.
Yes, sir.
You know, that says not just a lot about Bobby being the type of friend that he is, but it says a lot about you, Dick, that you have, I don't know anywhere the word other than, I'd say you've touched Bobby. You know, if I wasn't close to somebody like that, I wouldn't drive 20 hours. You meant a lot to him.
Right.
And a friend.
He means a lot to me, too. He just like a brother.
And I know the story, but tell our listeners how you met Bobby, because, you know, I'm hearing this, and if I didn't know the backstory, I'm thinking that this is somebody that you've known your whole life and that you're super close with. But really, you know, you and Bobby haven't known each other that long.
No. 8 years. Bobby called me 8 years ago, and he said, I have a good walker female, and she won a Virginia State twice and placed in the top four two other times, and he was wanting semen off Big Mike. I had frozen semen. So I said, if you have that caliber of female, I would just give you semen for a pup or something. And we went on them from there, and we had a litter of pups out of her. And Bobby said, you want to partner up on a pup? I said, sure, we can do that. And we partnered up on Charlie Creek Big Mac. And he won a couple hunts with Mac, and I brought him up to Indiana. I granted him out. And we became partners ever since. And just like I said, we like brothers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know you talk.
He called me every day of the week, every day.
Yeah. You know, it's good. It's good to have a partner like that.
Yes, sir. I wish he lived closer.
Yeah, I guarantee it. Because you still go down there and hunt with him. And
yes,
he comes
sir.
Up here. And
every February, I make a trip down there for a week or two.
If there were no competitions, would you have coon hunted this long?
I think so, because I like seeing a dog work. But competition hunters sets me, so to speak, on fire. You know, I like a competition. You know, I like training dogs too. You know, I've trained about every dog I've owned. You know, I'm proud of that record. You know,
you take pride in breeding the dogs, training the dogs, and winning with those dogs.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the dogs that you've had. Let's go through the lineage. You know, I think these dogs deserve some credit, and we're going to give credit where credit is due. So, obviously, Tara won the World Hunt.
Yes, sir.
So she's won the biggest of all of them.
Right.
Let's talk about some of your other dogs you've had. Let's
well,
go back through.
Well, I won Walker Days in 1997 with she was owned by my buddy and me, Lee McFan. And we we won Walker Days with in 1997, and we placed our fifth on the apprentice circuit that year, and she won it. A lot of major hunt, and we had to pull her out of the premier circuit because she had heartworms and treat her. So then I had a that was another good dog, and then I had Charlie Creek Clay, which was out of World Champion Terror and Hard Woodbuster too. He was a very nice dog. He reproduced too. And he produced Charlie Creek Edge. And Edge produced Charlie Creek Big Mike. And then Sarah produced Charlie Creek Loctite Tees. And that was mother Big Mike. And then Clay produced Charlie Creek Stone. He was Grand Knight champion, PKC gold champion back then in $30 hunts, $50 hunts.
And to reach gold champion, that's $10,000.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was a lot back then.
Right.
Really. And then I've been blessed, you know, and but I'm also particular on dogs, you know. I'm hunting Charlie Creek Big Timer out now. I own him with Bobby Overy. And I'm hunting Fire, Charlie Creek Wildfire. She was by Charlie Creek Clay Seaman and Big Timer's mother, Taylor Run Storm.
So let's talk about the style of dogs that they are. You know, I've been hunting with you lately, and Timer is he's a different style of dog than what I'm used to hunting lately. Timer starts hunting from the time you turn him loose. He hunts right there where you turn him loose. He's not blowing through the world a mile and a half before he starts hunting. He's treeing those coons that are laying up. Is that a characteristic that has been bred in your line of dogs since the beginning?
Somewhat, but he will. Well, if coons aren't down, he will go hunting.
Oh, he absolutely will.
Definitely, yeah. He will be half a mile deep in the country somewhere, you know. But he could trail the old bad tracks and lay up coons. But I like a dog, the style. I like a track dog. I don't like a trailing dog.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
That's a big difference. And sometimes a coon needs treed, not trailed. You know.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, really.
I've never heard anybody say that.
Really. You know. Other times I've hunted with some guys in the past say, that dog don't open. Well, he's open trailer, but it gets fall treed. That's one thing in the stock of dogs that's really good, because they can tree a coon close, they can tree another coon close right away, and when other dogs in running through the country looking for a hot coon.
Yeah, and I think we saw that the other night. You know, you and I were out hunting, and we kind of got caught in a pop-up snowstorm, and it was miserable. We got what's that old analogy? Just one more drop.
Yeah.
Got the best of us. But Timer, he trailed up a pair of coon sitting in a tree in terrible scenting conditions.
Yeah. It's just snow on the ground too.
Yeah. I mean, the wind was blowing, ground was frozen, snow was coming down hard, and he worked up that track, and he had the coon at the end of that.
Right.
Where I feel like a lot of the dogs that I've hunted with lately, they weren't going to grub that up.
Right.
They were going to go try and find a hot one, and there probably wasn't too many hot ones to tree.
That time of night, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, them coons are already laid up.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. So if we talk about that, let's talk about the style of dogs of yesteryear and today. When you first got into competition hunting versus today, what are you seeing? What are the...
Well, what I seen years ago, you had to be a very good caller and handler because that was a calling contest back then. You know, dogs were split treed very much. They were usually pack, you know. But there again, you know, that's why Chet kept his strain of dogs. They were naturally independent back way back then, you know. But that's why I've seen in competition hunts today. And, you know, these dogs are trained different, too. Some dogs you have to break down to make them good. And, you know, some dogs, they can be ruined, too.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. So you think that the training styles have changed, and with that, the dogs have changed with them? Or do you think that the training has changed to fit the dogs?
I think the training is somewhat changed to fit the dog's needs. You know, shocking collars are used, and tone buttons are used, and they're hunted different. But, you know, I always hunt a dog by itself a lot. So when I would go to the night hunt, I would have a naturally independent dog, you know, by hunting them alone.
Do you think that the current situation with the ever-changing way that hunters in general are perceived and the way that hunting ground is becoming harder to come by, do you think that we're going to have to slow these dogs down that are blowing through the world? Or do you think it's something that's just going to continue to down the same path that it's in?
Well, why they're blowing through the world, that's man-made. Yeah. And I think that will get you in trouble sometime, you know, hunting too far. And, you know, I know a guy that I've drawn three times, and two out of the three times, his dog blowed out of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Why have a dog that like that, really, you know? Because my way of thinking, you're going to lose more than you win.
Right.
You know, if you can't hear a dog, you can't take a call.
Yeah, deep and lonely. You know, that's the name of this podcast. But that's right now, that's the name of the game.
Right, right.
If you ask, I would say 8 out of 10 people, what type of dog do you prefer? Deep and lonely.
Well, not so far deep, but I like a dog if I strike a track out of the truck. I want them on a first coon.
Right.
Absolutely. But when we recast, I want them scattered like quail. Really.
Right.
But, you know, there again, you know, if you have 90-minute hunt or 2-hour hunt, a dog, it gets deep and lonely, a mile deep, you can see two or three coon behind that dog.
What type of hunt do you prefer? Do you prefer the hour, 90-minute, or 120-minute cast?
I don't like an hour hunt. I like a 90-minute or a 2-hour hunt. Because if you have an accurate dog, the other dogs will make a mistake in a 2-hour hunt or 90-minute hunt.
So your thought process is you're counting on other dogs to make a mistake and your dogs to stay where they need to be, stay in their lane, and do what they do their job.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you're confident in that whenever
yes,
you take a dog to a hunt.
Very confident.
You know, I drew you. It's kind of funny. I drew you over to hunt the other night. I told Nikki when we went to the hunt, I said, man, there's one person I don't want to draw. I said, that's Dick Brothers. That we've been hunting together a lot lately, and I just assume not draw him, you know. And what do? We go out and draw each other, and we both lost the cast.
Right.
neither one of us came out with the win. But you made a comment at the end of it, and you had a little passion in your voice when you said it. You said, "This is the third cast in a row I've lost, and that doesn't happen very often."
Yeah.
The Houndsman XP Podcast Network is powered by Cajun Lights. All of your lighting needs for hunting can be taken care of at Cajun Lights. They have three models of cap lights. I'm going to run through them real quick. You've got the Rogueroo, which is their high-end light. If you're a competition hunter and you got to find that coon up in a tree and it's all riding on finding that coon, you'll want the Rogueroo on your head. Next is the Bayou. That's a pretty standard light, but it's got packed with features. It's got multiple colors. It's got walking lights. It's got the red, the green, the amber. It's all built in right into that light. And then you have one of my personal favorites, the Micro Gator. The Micro Gator is an ultra lightweight cap light. It's got all the features of a white light, red, green, and amber. I've used this light for everything from finding bear tracks early in the morning to coon hunting at night to working on plumbing in the house, changing tires on the side of the road. My truck doesn't leave the driveway without a Cajun light in it, and that light is the Micro Gator. Every Cajun light is durable, made from the highest quality components, and it is backed by Cajun's top-rated customer service. Check out Cajun Lights. You can go to our website at houndsmanxp.com. Go to our sponsors page. Hit that link. It'll take you right to Cajun Lights. Check them out. They got a lot of stuff to offer over at Cajun Lights.
You're winning one or two out of every three casts. That's a pretty good percentage.
Right. Well, yeah. There's a lot of good dogs out there anymore, you know. And every dog will split tree, you know. And just having breaks, you know.
Got to have the breaks.
Just like the other night, you know. We didn't hear that dog, other dog, for a long, long time. He was deep. He was about too deep, my opinion. You know, but we treat on dens, and he had a coon.
And a coon wins every time.
In an hour hunt, that's hard to beat.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
But I had a chance to win that cast. She had a 100 strike, 100 tree. And if he had a coon, she wins. You know? But
yep.
She didn't, you know?
Yep. She had a den tree.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, we tried everything we could to get that coon to come out of there.
Yeah.
It just wasn't happening.
No.
Other than the guys that got you started, have you had anybody that you would consider a mentor along the way? Has there been anybody that you've looked up to and taken advice from? Or is it kind of just been trial and error and learn as you go?
Well, advice from some people and... I listen in conversations, and I've learned a lot through conversations,
mm-hmm.
talking to other people, and but I trial and error is the biggest thing, really. You know, I never have been afraid to ask for help or advice either.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, I've got a few guys that I'll go to whenever I have a question. You know, and lately it's been you trying to work on this pup, and I'm very appreciative for that because, you know, if you can take that advice and that knowledge that somebody who's been there, done that, and use it, you know, take what you want from it, but use that. I feel like it can really progress you a lot further, and I think, you know, that's something that could help a lot of other people as well.
Right.
You know. Listen to those who've been there before and who've done it.
Right.
You know, they didn't get good for no reason.
Right.
I'm
still learning at 72. You never quit learning, really.
Never quit learning.
No.
That's it. Every day, learn something new.
Yes, sir. I try to.
Right. So let's talk about some upcoming events that you've got. You've got two dogs here at your house that you're pushing right now. You got the old Big Timer, and you got Fire. Both of those dogs qualified for the Tournament of Champions this year, right?
Right.
And so that takes 5 wins apiece. Did you put all 10 wins on those dogs last year?
Yes, sir.
You didn't have any help from anybody else?
No.
And that's how much you're still going to these hunts. And that's just in UKC.
Yeah.
You've got Fire qualified for the spring Super Stakes coming up here. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see you in action at the Tournament Champions as well as the spring Super Stakes.
Yeah, and at Walker Days, too.
And at Walker Days.
Three big hunts in a row.
And you're gonna be there.
Yes, sir.
Competing. Yep. You're gonna be competing because you've got dogs that are gonna be there, and hopefully, make a run at it again.
Yeah. Two out of three last years, I had Timer in the Super Stakes. He's a quarterfinals 2 years out of three.
Yeah, and they're only eligible for three years, right. Unless you count baby stakes, and they can come in for four. But two out of three, I mean, that's a hard to do.
And he was a sick dog having had Ehrlichia too. You know, I've done quite a bit with him, really.
Yeah, and it shows. When you go to these hunts now or back in the day, is there a dog that you dread to see pull into that hunt? Is there one dog back in the day or today that you're like, dang, so-and-so's here, they're going to be tough to beat?
Not at all. I'm not intimidated by a dog. You know, I have some people after me, who did you draw, Dick? I said, just dogs. You know, really. I've been at this a long time, you know. When I was younger, I would get nervous. But when I made this first tree, I was over that.
Right.
But I don't get nervous anymore, you know. And my heart may thump a little or more often.
Right.
Yeah, but I still love it. But I'm not intimidated by anyone.
You're there to compete, and you're there to win.
Yes, sir.
And if you don't have a dog capable, you're not going to be there.
No.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of time to train a dog. Really, you know.
And time marches on, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. You've done it for a long time. Are you seeing better results now? Maybe than what you did back in the day, if that makes sense.
Well, I've had this stock of dogs for 35 years, and I've stuck with this line of dogs because they reproduce. They were natural, independent. I like to make my job easy. I don't want to work at training a dog. That's a lot. What's what I like about naturals.
When you're looking for the next female to breed, what are you looking for? Are you trying to get one trait out of each cross to improve one thing? Or are you looking for multiple, most bang for your buck?
Well, sometimes I will go with one trait I like, you know. Maybe a harder tree dog, a better strike dog, you know, a better track dog. I look at a whole package, but if I see one thing I can use on my stock of dogs, I go with it.
And you've got a little pup here at the house as well. You haven't started her yet, but when you made that cross, what were you looking for?
Well, I didn't make a cross.
Okay.
You know, but Luke Stark made that cross.
Okay.
And that pup is out of Big Mike Jr. And he was out of Big Mike.
Okay.
And the female side went back to my World Champion Terror. And World Champion Terror sired HAH World Champion Miller's Roxanne. And that's what that pup is out of that cross right there.
Did you win the ACHA?
No.
With Roxanne?
But Terry Colder and Ron Wiggeman did.
Okay.
With Roxy.
Gotcha.
So Terry produced a world champion herself.
Gotcha. So a world champion produced a world champion.
Yes, sir.
That's pretty yeah. incredible.
Yeah, sure.
That's very neat. You've done well over the years, Dick.
So I would think that would, I think that would pup would cross well with my stock of dogs. You know.
Do you have any plans to breed Timer next? Is he the next stud dog in line for your line, or do you think you'll go back to some stored semen that you've got?
Well, matter of fact, we just bred a female, Honey Creek Spider female, and I was told today that she's bred.
Oh, good.
So he's going to be a papa pretty soon.
Is that his first litter?
Yes, sir. First litter.
What are you predicting Timer will throw? Can you predict it at this point, or is every litter, you know, just a guess?
Well, I've seen my stock of draws. It's going to produce on Honey Creek Hairy bitches and Honey Creek Spider bitches. So I'm looking. Timer will produce tree dogs, big mouths, and track dogs, too. I predict that right away. And I have another Grand Knight champion bitch booked to him anytime. She's a really good bitch, and we expect big things out of that cross, too.
Right. So at 72, you're getting ready to enter three major hunts. I assume you're going to try and get qualified for the world this year?
Yeah, this weekend.
This weekend you're going to go to a qualifier?
Yeah.
How long do you see yourself competing? What does the future hold for Dick Brothers?
Well, I don't know. It's all as long as I can hear and I can walk, I'm going to compete.
It's something that is just ingrained in you now.
Right.
You know, I just didn't know, you know, I hope that I'm still competing at the level that you are whenever I get there. It's impressive. It's impressive, Dick.
Yeah. Thank you.
So like I said, I didn't know what the future held for Dick. I didn't know if that was something that you would be able to hang up when the time comes.
As long as I can produce a winner, I'm going to campaign, you know?
Right.
And I met a lot of guys, a lot of nice guys through this sport, you know?
Fellowship is unreal in the sport of coon hunting.
And, you know, coon hunters are a close breed. They may be competitive, but they also will help you if you need something.
They will.
Yes, sir.
Very true statement.
Yeah.
Well, Dick, I think that's covered just about everything I have. Is there anything else you'd like to speak about or talk about while we got you on here?
No. I just wish you luck with Timer and a German championship.
I hope we have some luck as well. For our listeners, I'm going to be handling Timer for Dick up at the tournament champions. Dick had, like I said, he's got two dogs in and he's only one guy.
So
he can't handle them both.
Well, Bobby's going to handle Fire for me, and I was going to handle Timer, but he's got a world champion squirrel hunt that's weekend. They switched his dates on him.
Right.
And next year, that won't happen.
There you go.
But we had to find a handler, so we'll see what we can do.
Hey, man, I hope we go out there and win it all.
Yeah, well. Just can try.
I have had a blast, you know, hunting with you the last few weeks. And I told Nikki that as well. You know, you've taken myself, my girlfriend, our boy, taking us hunting. And, you know, we're super appreciative of that, Dick. It's nice to have somebody who wants to spend those nights in the woods with you. We're not always hunting by yourself.
Right.
Somebody you can just bounce ideas off of. And
well, you're more than welcome.
And fellowship really. With.
Anytime you want to do.
Yeah.
You know? I told you that, yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, how's the night sound?
That sounds good.
All right, well, it's a done deal. It's a good thing I already packed my boots. I had a feeling you'd want to go hunting tonight.
Okay.
All right, Dick. Well, I appreciate you joining us here on the Deep and Lonely Podcast. Look forward to hunting with you here in the next few weeks and making a run at the TOC. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and speak to us today.
Okay. Thank you, Bryce.
Thanks, buddy.